This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Pelosi calls out Barr. Good morning. I'm Mike Gavin, in for Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It's Friday, May 3rd, 2018, and here's what we have for you this hour.
In a major escalation of tensions between Congress and the executive branch, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi accuses Attorney General William Barr of lying to Congress.
Facebook is banning personalities it deems as dangerous from its social media platforms.
Flooding in Davenport, Iowa is expected to break another record today. Residents are being encouraged to stay away from possibly contaminated water.
And how to stay away from the noisiest seats on the plane.
What we did started with was a simple decibel meter, and I started taking it on flights and started noticing differences. Well, where you sat in the front of the back of the plane, window seat, aisle seat, exit rows, there were differences.
Wall Street Journal airline columnist Scott McCartney. We'll hear more from him in about 20 minutes. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is accusing Attorney General William Barr of misleading Congress in appearances on Capitol Hill in recent weeks, a major escalation of a battle between Congress and the executive branch.
The Attorney General of the United States of America was not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States. That's a crime.
Meanwhile, leading Democrats threatened to have Mr. Barr detained, fined, or impeached in the fallout from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of the 2016 presidential election. At issue was Mr. Barr's testimony April 9th before the House, in which he professed ignorance about reported complaints from the Special Counsel's team over Mr. Barr's handling of the public rollout of the report. It's now known that Mr. Mueller himself raised concerns on March 25th and March 27th letters to Mr. Barr about the Attorney General's characterization of Mr. Mueller's report in a four-page summary that Mr. Barr then sent to Congress. The second letter was followed by a phone call between the two. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy disagrees with the Speaker's assessment.
Attorney General Barr has been very transparent, brought forward the information. I think it's time to stop wasting this majority and actually get something done for the American public.
All this comes on the heels of the Attorney General's refusal to appear before a House panel yesterday after a squabble with Democrats over the hearing's format. New York Congressman Gerald Nadler, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, has threatened to hold Mr. Barr in contempt or have him arrested or fined for refusing to comply with a subpoena. President Trump says a second of his picks for a Federal Reserve position was out of consideration following resistance from Republican senators, a further setback to his efforts to place political allies at the central bank. Mr. Trump tweeted that conservative commentator Stephen Moore has decided to withdraw from the Fed process. The announcement came less than 2 hours after Moore told the Wall Street Journal and other news outlets that he would continue to seek the nomination. A person close to the White House told the Journal that opposition from several Republican senators and a concern that the public scrutiny about Mr. Moore would intensify were strong factors in his withdrawal. Count Iowa Senator Joni Ernst among those happy that Mr. Moore has withdrawn.
I'm very thankful that he made that choice. I think it was the right thing to do.
The withdrawal marks the end of a six-week period that began when Mr. Trump made clear he was seeking to place new members on the Fed board who shared his political views and agreed with him that the central bank has been too reluctant to lower interest rates to stimulate economic growth. Mr. Trump has also criticized Fed Chairman Jerome Powell, whom he nominated as favoring interest rates higher than the president would like. Facebook has banned an array of personalities whose views it deemed too inflammatory to be shared on its social network, including Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, far-right talk show host Alex Jones, and conservative Jewish activist Laura Loomer. The move was Facebook's most sweeping yet against online provocateurs and shows. Facebook is trying to be more proactive in removing controversial content that users post on its network, after months of criticism that the company hasn't done enough to prevent bullying, abuse, and hate speech. More now from this morning's Dave Duncan. Facebook said the people it banned violated a set of policies that prohibit dangerous individuals and organizations. That category, as defined by Facebook, includes people or groups that have called for or carried out acts of violence, use hate speech or slurs in their descriptions, or follow a hateful ideology. Facebook said that all representations of these people would be removed from its sites, which include Instagram. The company also said it would remove pages, groups, and accounts set up to represent the banned people, and it would remove events on Facebook when it knows one of the individuals is participating. Mike?
All right, thanks, Dave. Other individuals Facebook banned include self-described pro-white politician Paul Nehlen, media provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos, and conspiracy theorist Paul Joseph Watson. In a response to the Facebook decision, Mr. Yiannopoulos said, "Read Orwell. Censorship doesn't stop at the fringes. You're next." It's 11 minutes after the hour now.
This human resources professional is a rock star thanks to Kronos. And this is her hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire.
Have HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're engaging all the best people.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Gordon Deals Off, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for stopping by on this Friday. Well, we know campus police were able to stop Tuesday evening's UNC Charlotte shooting fairly quickly, almost certainly preventing further loss of life. But what about preventing it from happening in the first place? Chris Quintana from USA Today has been looking into that and joins us now. Chris, it seems many students at UNC Charlotte felt that the school handled the situation well. What did you find out?
Yeah, in talking with students, and this was a little bit unusual just based on the coverage that I've done in the past, I've been covering colleges for a while now, students often have an issue with the way that the university responds, but that was not the case here. The people I talked to said, you know, the response was pretty quick. They got an alert right away. There was a lot of praise for the police and responding quickly and stopping, you know, the shooter before anything worse could happen. So that really stood out to me in doing my initial reporting.
What kind of alerts went out and what happened here?
It's my understanding that they have an emergency alert system, and they sent out an alert kind of letting students know. I think the message was run, hide, fight. This one student I talked to said she got the message on her phone. That's increasingly common for students to sign up for emergency notifications on their phones and universities, and that appears to be what happened here.
We're speaking with USA Today reporter Chris Quintana. Chris, are we in a situation now where there are some students who have become numb to this situation, and do we know if there are false alerts that come in?
Well, so there are sometimes alerts that go out. I remember I used to cover the University of New Mexico in New Mexico, and periodically they would send out alerts that were a little old about, you know, someone who had been on campus or who had been an issue but was no longer. And definitely I recall the student body in that scenario being a little bit not jaded, but perhaps a little cautious about the alerts and what the efficacy of them. I think in this scenario, one student I was talking to, the word she used was inevitable in describing the shooting. It still felt surreal to her, but it felt also weirdly inevitable. I think this is a weird new reality that some students are finding themselves in.
Now let's talk about prevention. What measures can and will universities take?
Yeah, so I was talking with a few experts who deal with campus safety. They said as far as prevention goes, there's a lot of that can be done as far as encouraging people to report things when they see them, you kind of see something, say something approach. There are things to be done in as far as monitoring social media for, you know, weird messages or potentially messages that might indicate that someone was going to do something. So those seem to be a few options. I think part of it, the experts I was speaking to were really big on the idea that you have to get the community to really kind of buy into reporting and kind of monitoring them as well, because they're the ones who are the closest to the ground.
Now, in high schools, we've seen that there have been complete and total lockdowns. People can't get into the school unless they're a student or a teacher. University is definitely a different animal. How can they ever possibly stop people from coming on campus, or will they?
Yeah, I think that's a great question because there's not really a desire to stop people from coming and going on campuses. They're kind of open spaces and public spaces in a lot of ways. And, you know, often they're in cities and it's harder to shut them down in that way. And a lot of leaders kind of like the idea of a university being a place where people can come and go. And you know, it has to do with, you know, freedom of thought and that sort of thing. So Some you know, that's not to say that people have carte blanche to kind of just go into whatever building they want. I think some buildings are closed after dark, and you know, there are places, you know, obviously sensitive, where sensitive research happens that require some, you know, credentials. But I think for the most part, the grounds will continue to remain open. That's just something universities like to have.
All right. Thanks, Chris. That's Chris Quintana, reporter at USA Today. Meanwhile, an online petition has been started asking the White House to honor Riley Howell with a military burial. The ROTC cadet has been lauded as a hero for saving lives as he rushed toward the shooter on Tuesday. 20 minutes after the hour now, Jennifer Kashenka is here with more of America's First News.
White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has accused Attorney General William Barr of misleading Congress in appearances on Capitol Hill. A major escalation of a battle between Congress and the executive branch. Pelosi says Barr lied to Congress.
The top law enforcement officer in our country, misrepresenting, withholding the truth from the Congress of the United States.
Leading Democrats are threatening to have Barr detained, fined, or impeached in the fallout from Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation of the 2016 presidential election. Meanwhile, President Trump told Fox it's time to end all the investigations.
So they've testified for many hours, all of them. Many people.
So as far as you're concerned, it's kind of done.
I can't say, well, one can and the others can't.
Okay, so is it done?
I would say it's done.
House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler says if Barr does not comply with his subpoena for the unredacted Mueller report and its underlying documents, he will move to hold Barr in contempt. According to a new report released by the Pentagon, sexual assaults across the military jumped nearly 38% in 2018. The report, which surveyed both men and women from the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, estimated that 20,500 members of those services experienced unwanted sexual contact last year. Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan announced additional steps the Pentagon would try to take to actively reduce an attempt to eliminate what has been a major issue for years. The Mississippi River near Davenport, Iowa, has reached its highest level ever and continues to rise. Store owner Rebecca Nick says she's never seen anything like it.
It's happened here in Davenport before. We've been fortunate enough to not have experienced it ourselves. We moved in 2013, and there was a 22-foot flood in 2014, but it was nothing compared to this.
Authorities have begun pushing sewage back into rivers after the wastewater plant in Davenport reached capacity. Peter Mayhew, the towering actor who wore a huge furry costume to give life to the beloved character of Chewbacca in the original Star Wars trilogy and two other films, has died. He was 74. As Chewbacca, the 7'3" Mayhew was a fierce warrior with a soft heart, loyal sidekick to Harrison Ford's Han Solo, and co-pilot of the Millennium Falcon.
And that's sad. You know, I'm a big Star Wars fan, Jen. And what amazed me when I was thinking about this is how many of the original cast, or how few of the original cast, have departed us with a movie that's over 40 years old. Most of the original cast is still with us. We had Carrie Fisher a couple years ago, and now Peter Mayhew, unfortunately. Thanks very much, Jim. 23 minutes after the hour now on This Morning, America's First News. Looking for a quiet place to relax on a long plane flight? You might be surprised how noisy certain parts of the plane are. More now from This Morning's Jennifer Kashenka.
The amount of noise you hear on a flight depends on the plane, your seat, and how you prepare. Wall Street Journal middle seat columnist Scott McCartney has some tips on how you can make your next journey a peaceful one. Scott, how did you go about measuring airplane noise?
Well, this actually came from a reader question and suggestion. And what we started with was a simple decibel meter, and I started taking it on flights and started noticing differences. Well, where you sat in the front of the back of the plane, window seat, aisle seat, exit rows, there were differences. And some of the loudest noises were a bit of a surprise. The announcements from flight attendants and pilots, for example, are about the loudest things you hear, and that's by design, so that in an emergency you can hear them over over everything else. And then we went to experts, to an acoustics chamber where they do a lot of aircraft noise testing, and to the manufacturers themselves.
What are some of the other noisiest noises you heard on a plane?
Overhead bin slams, crying babies, the toilet flushing, flight attendants slamming doors and carts and stuff in the galley. All those things, even the dings you hear when somebody calls the flight attendant or they're signaling the flight attendants from the cockpit. All those things registered fairly high in the 90 to 100 decibel range.
It didn't surprise me, Scott, that the back of the plane is the noisiest if you've ever sat back there. Was there anything else surprising about what you found of where things sounded in the plane?
I was surprised that particularly on wide-body planes, exit doors, people crave the exit row seats for extra legroom, but those doors don't seal up as well as the regular skin of the airplane, and so noise gets through. In today's planes, it's interesting that it's also interesting to me that engine noise has been reduced considerably, and the benefit has been mostly on the ground, not in the air. The noise reduction in the cabin has not been as large. It's also not been as large as noise reductions in automobiles and things like that. What you have now is in new planes, about 70% of the noise comes from the wind rushing over the skin of the airplane, less so from the engine. Now, if you sit in the back of the airplane, there's that cone of engine noise, and it comes at you because you're moving forward, and you add that to all the regular noise of the airplane, and it's definitely noisier in the back if you're behind or even next to the engines.
Wall Street Journal airline columnist Scott McCartney with our own Jennifer Koshenka. Coming up on 30 minutes after the hour now, you're listening to This Morning, America's First News.
At Dell, we know running a small business takes hard work. As a thank you, for all of Small Business Month, we're offering up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Plus, get additional savings when you call a Dell Small Business Technology Advisor. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. That's 877-BUY-DELL. Additional savings valid May 6th through 30th at 8 a.m. Eastern on select computers from customer calls Dell. Excludes Dell Canvas, PowerEdge T30, and select order codes.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
It's 34 minutes after the hour. Gordon Deal is off. I'm Mike Gavin, sitting in on this Friday, the third day of May. Here's some of the headlines we're following for you this morning. The standoff between Congress and the Attorney General continues to simmer over the Mueller report. Facebook is banning controversial personalities from its platforms, including Instagram. The Pentagon says China's military is using espionage to steal secrets. A soldier was seriously injured but miraculously survived a fall from a 300-foot-high cliff into the crater of the Kilauea volcano in Hawaii. And the heartwarming story of an unwanted dog who found the perfect owner. More on that in about 20 minutes. Coming to you live today from the Dell Studios, Dell is thanking small businesses this month with up to 45% off select computers with Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with a small business technology advisor today. The April jobs report is set to be released this morning, and while hiring continues to be strong overall, the monthly numbers have been a little unpredictable so far this year. Here to try to predict what we'll see and take a look at what this year's crop of new college graduates can expect is Bankrate.com senior analyst Mark Hamrick. Mark, what are we looking for when it comes to payrolls?
Well, first of all, the good news about the U.S. economy has been that, largely speaking, it has been steady as she goes. And so despite some volatility month to month, remember we had more than 300,000 jobs created back in January, and then we had a downside surprise in February, and then back to normal for the March report. So we think the April reading that we're about to get is going to be similar to March, and that means something on the order of probably around 180,000 jobs added. And we know that we're coming off basically 3% growth in the recent past in the U.S., and while we might be moderating from that and slowing just a bit, let's think of it as tapping the brakes rather than hitting a wall.
Earlier this week, the ADP report came out with 275,000 jobs created. Of course, that's a private sector measurement, but why was that one so out of whack?
Well, we don't know exactly, but Mark Zandi of Moody's, who's essentially the ambassador for that report, basically has said that it is statistically questionable. So I'm basically drawing a line through the ADP this time and saying there shouldn't be anything to take away from that report. If ADP is not standing behind the report, we probably shouldn't assign more importance to it either. What we typically will see with ADP is that while the number itself may not be terribly informative with respect to what the Labor Department number looks like, what it can do is point you in the sense of a trajectory, meaning if there is a move significantly up, down, or sideways, we can take something from that. But if Mr. Zandi's saying look elsewhere, I think that's probably good advice.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, let's talk about the general jobs picture. This is the month where many college kids are graduating. What kind of marketplace are they stepping into?
Well, the good news is that this is one of the best job markets that we've had for quite some time, obviously with the unemployment rate recently at 4% or below. So, assuming that they chose the right major and did their homework and perhaps even had an internship or two, and even better if they've actually worked somewhere and had some real-life experience in the workforce, then they should take heart that the prospects are good. I do, though, think also about the fact that obviously we'll have another group of entering college freshmen this fall, and with economic expansion now 10 years old and on track to become the longest in U.S. history, these expansions don't last forever, and so it may well be that the freshmen who are going to college in this fall and then obviously graduating 4 years later, most of them, the several million people obviously in that group, they should probably think about the prospect that there may be an economic downturn along the way. Hopefully it's a short and shallow one, though.
And what majors do you think they should be concentrating on?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, they should concentrate in a major that's optimal for them and not necessarily only what the job market suggests. It's one thing to be passionate. It's another to be capable, and capability is the most important thing. But in terms of for college grads, the good news here is that there really is strength across the board with respect to all the sectors that are producing jobs. In terms of a longer-term outlook, I'd recommend healthcare because we do have an aging population. We spend about one-fifth of our gross national product on healthcare, so that is going to continue to be important. Business and professional sectors, you know, obviously finance, engineering, anything related to STEM. As we look at areas such as cybersecurity and those related to climate change and trying to optimize for the environment, including alternative energy, all those would be good picks at this point.
All right, we'll be watching. Thanks, Mark. Bankrate.com Senior Economic Analyst Mark Hamrick joining us this morning. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, how to rack up rewards for buying everyday stuff. Well, you know, it seems a little counterintuitive to what our parents taught us, but if you're careful, there are definite advantages to making almost all of your purchases using credit cards, as long as you're smart about what kind of cards you use for each type of purchase and make sure to keep track and cash in on your rewards. A look into that now from Jana Herron, personal finance reporter at USA Today, who outlines five ways to get more back from your everyday spending. So Jana, let's start at the top there by picking the right card. What should we be looking at?
I mean, I have two credit cards in my wallet. One gives me accelerated earnings on gas and groceries, and the other has accelerated earnings on dining out or restaurants. So always knowing which card gives you the best earnings rewards is the one that you should pick when you go shopping or you're out at a restaurant.
And that sometimes is a little bit of trial and error, right? Sometimes you'll have a card and you'll realize it's not working for you, and it might be time to maybe look at some of those offers you're getting in the mail.
Definitely. And the other thing is there are some cards, not many, but some that have rotating categories by quarter. So, for example, maybe in the spring or summer, you can earn a lot more if you shop at, say, Home Depot, or you're doing some kind of home repair or home improvement. So knowing those categories is really smart, and making sure that you register for that extra earnings every quarter.
And you also write that the more we swipe, the more rewards we should be getting, right?
Yes, well, obviously, the more you spend on your card, the more rewards you're going to get back. But some credit card companies actually reward you more if you do say, 20 transactions a month or in a billing cycle. So you might get an extra, like, 20%. So that's a really a good way to get a little bit more back from your everyday spending.
We also should be on the lookout for bonus offers from our credit cards. What are some of those?
Yeah, I think most people are pretty familiar with those sign-up bonuses where you could get maybe $150 back or even $500 cash back if you spend so much in those first 3 months after you open the card. But there are other promotions that your credit card company might run. For example, during the holidays, they might have a special seasonal offer that if you shop at a, say, a small business, you might earn 20% more back. And then Discover has their cashback match. So at the end of your first year, they will match all the cashback that you earn during the first year.
We're speaking with Jana Herron, personal finance reporter at USA Today, about ways to get more back from our everyday spending on our credit cards. So you talk in your story about using online shopping portals. What are those and what can they do for us?
Yeah, so your credit card company actually partners with a lot of different retailers and stores. And so if you're going to go and buy something online, say from Old Navy or Macy's, go through your credit card rewards website because you're going to earn extra for the dollars that you spend on at those retailers instead of going directly to the retailer site or to the store.
Also, increasing our footprint with a particular bank can be beneficial as well. How so?
Oh, absolutely. So banks really want more than just your credit card business. You know, they want you to have a checking account. They want you to get a loan through them. So a lot of times, one way to incentivize you to do that is that you can actually earn more rewards if you, say, have a mortgage with your credit card issuer, or you take out a personal loan, or you have a checking account. So make sure that those offers for those products are something that you want and are the best one for you, but that's another way to really increase your rewards earnings.
All right, thanks, Jana. Jana Herron, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Jana also makes note that you need to pay off your balances to make sure that all of these rewards work the best for you. 13 minutes in front of the hour now. You're listening to This Morning, America's First News.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna hide. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Gordon Deal's out. I'm Mike Gavin. Mr. Deal returns to the chair on Monday. And even if he is out, you can still keep track of what he's up to. Make sure to follow Gordon on Twitter. He's at Gordon Deal, of course. You can follow the show at This Morning Show. And I'm there occasionally tweeting as well. You can find me at Radio Gavin 1. 9 minutes now in front of the hour. Jennifer Kashenka has returned with more of America's First News.
Mike, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she lost sleep over Attorney General William Barr's Senate testimony Wednesday about the Mueller report, accusing him of lying to Congress. She says Barr will be held accountable by Congress one way or another.
His motivation, his loyalty, is not to his oath of office, and it is to Donald Trump, but all of it, and the Republicans in Congress, is to the special interest.
Meanwhile, White House attorney Emmett Flood wrote to Barr in mid-April regarding special counsel Robert Mueller's report into meddling in the 2016 election, saying the finding suffers from extraordinary legal defect. It quite deliberately fails to comply with the requirements of governing law. The letter, dated one day after Barr released a redacted version of the report to the public, attacks the Mueller team for not making a decision on obstruction of justice. After years of pressure to crack down on hate and bigotry, Facebook has banned Louis Farrakhan, Alex Jones, and other extremists, saying they violated its ban on dangerous individuals. The bans apply to both Facebook's main service and to Instagram, and extend to fan pages and other related accounts, called censorship by several of those who got the axe. The move signals a renewed effort by the social media giant to remove people and groups promoting objectionable material such as hate, racism, and anti-Semitism. Cyclone Fani has made landfall on India's eastern coast as a grade 5 storm, lashing the empty beaches with rain and wind gusting up to 127 miles an hour. Over 1 million people have been evacuated from low-lying areas, and moved to nearly 4,000 shelters. Several deaths have been reported so far. Well, it was an idea that sounded kind of crazy when we first heard about it, meatless hamburgers. But the concept seems to be catching fire. Shares of plant-based meat maker Beyond Meat Incorporated skyrocketed in their public debut yesterday. The initial public offering was priced at $25 and surged to $65.75 by the end of the day, giving Beyond Meat a market cap of $3.8 billion. It was the biggest popping IPO for a U.S. company with a market cap of at least $200 million in 19 years.
So Ross Akay and I were talking about this in the newsroom yesterday, about the meatless burgers. Mm-hmm. Lots of talk about the Impossible Burger at Burger King. She said, what do you think about these meatless burgers? I said, look, I'm not going to buy one. I'm an unapologetic carnivore. But if someone has one, let's say you have one, and you say,
you're going to eat mine,
yeah,
but you're not going to buy it?
I'll have a bite. Trust me, I'm probably not going to eat the whole thing, but at least I'll taste it. But I'm probably not going to buy one, at least not initially. Someone's going to have to sell me on this.
Right.
I know you were all excited about this. You said, go meatless burgers. But to me, if I'm going to have a bun, I want to have some meat in there.
On.
If I'm going to eat the bun, I'll chuck the bun and I'll just eat the burger.
I will buy one and let you taste it.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, the perfect pairing of dog and owner. Well, if you haven't heard this story yet, it will certainly make you feel good heading into your weekend. A man born deaf has been in the news this week after adopting a puppy in a story with a fairy tale ending. Maine resident Nick Abbott told local TV that he saw a Facebook post about a dog named Emerson from a local dog rescue. He was intrigued because, like him, the dog was also deaf. Emerson was rescued from Florida when she was 6 weeks old, or when he was 6 weeks old. He had experienced seizures and was infected with canine porovirus, a contagious virus affecting dogs that can be fatal if left untreated. All of Emerson's siblings were adopted quickly, but our sweet boy Emerson, as the post said, was still looking for a home. Abbott says that when he first visited Emerson, the dog came right to him and sat at his feet. Abbott immediately adopted the puppy and began teaching him sign language commands. For instance, the letter S is sit, and sweeping his hand across in a straight line is lie down. And if Abbott reaches up and shakes his earlobe, Emerson will bark. Abbott says that the bond between him and Emerson is awesome and that he thinks the match was meant to be. That's a wrap on this hour. For Jennifer Kishenka, I'm Mike Gavin. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.